Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And this show is about a book that I just finished reading. And I'm so in love with this book. I want everybody to read it. So I'm going to be interviewing the author on the show, and I'm so excited. It's called Biting Back. It's how to protect yourself in life. And the author is Claudia Cunningham. Claudia, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter. Thank you so much. I'm real excited to be here.
Good. I'm so excited you are, because this book is so helpful. It's put such a nice light on so many issues in my life in a way that really helps me understand. And I've also been helping a lot of people over the years, and this is going to help me do even a better job at helping us all, because this book is so helpful to understand what we need in ourselves and in even in others to keep our lives clean. And you're somebody who needed to do a lot of cleanup, and you're writing this book from, in good part, from your own experience, right?
Yes. Entirely from my own experience, in fact, yes. Well, and of course, you know, the shared experiences of other people, you know, like myself, which is one of the things I recommend we do when we find ourselves in trouble, of course, is to find a community of people who have had similar challenges, because those are the people that know the road, you know.
Well, not only were you able to do a lot of house cleaning in your own life, but the lessons you learned are so well communicated. And it's interesting, because you put it together in a form that actually is a good how-to manual on creating a much happier life. And I know that you have for yourself. You write about it. And it's so interesting to see what it takes and how much humility and forgiveness there is.
And it takes, somebody teaching you the rules. I mean, being introduced to just some tools for how to do this stuff, because I don't think a lot of us were brought up, you know, being told, you know, to look within. In fact, particularly in the last few years, it seems like we've been given an excellent demonstration by one of our leaders a few years back that exactly how to not take responsibility for your actions, and how to point the finger at everybody else and to sit quietly and wait till things blow over and you can change the story. and that's a shame, because it's just, you know, we're not learning to look to ourselves as the problem. And I had never thought of looking to myself as the problem until I absolutely had to, or rather as a part of the problem. When I hit bottom with my, you know, as they say, hit bottom with my alcoholism and drug abuse, and really had no more ideas about what to do, because I was ready to, I wanted to die, and I couldn't seem to make myself do that, and I could no longer drink or use. Well, you're kind of out of ideas when you can't do either of those anymore. And that was what opened my mind to going to a 12-step group, which was exactly what I never wanted to do. That was the exact direction I never wanted to go was a 12-step group. And that was where I learned that if I had any hope of being sane and sober for the rest of my life, I was going to have to change that perspective. And when I found myself in trouble, stop looking outside myself and pointing the finger and trying to make excuses so that I would look good. but rather find what part I had it in that situation and clean it up.
Well, there's a whole process in this book that is not, it's about everything in our lives that need work. And I, what I love about it is the way the theme that you use is the theme that these issues are our vampires. And it could be people, could be alcohol or drugs. Very often, for most of us who aren't, don't have alcohol and drug problems, we have people problems.
Yes.
And this is a step-by-step approach on how to deal with these vampires. That's why the book is called Biting Back. And it's so beautifully written about understanding the rules that go about bringing vampires into our lives. They have to come by invitation, right?
That's correct. And that was that's the first most extraordinary thing, and what really attracted me to vampire mythology was that particular part of vampire mythology was I had never heard before reading Stephen King's Salem's Lot in the mid-80s. I had never heard that a vampire needed an invitation to cross the threshold before it could come in and start sucking your blood. I always had this image of the vampire being on the balcony with the curtains blowing and you know, sort of staring at you and then finally walking in. And I didn't know that at some point an invitation had to have been extended to the vampire to do that. And if you watch the old Dracula movies closely and all that, and you know, read all the books, you will see an invitation occur at one point or another where they have said, yes, you're allowed in the house.
So it's important to recognize that all the people in our lives that are feeding off of us have actually been invited in.
Absolutely. And it's not, I mean, there are people who have, you know, who are kind of vampires, who really are insatiable. They have a need for others to take care of them, and I really think it's something even deeper. I think they have a need to steal life from other people. I mean, they haven't quite, you know, in the mythology, a vampire is someone who is separated from God, who, you know, from their God, from usually by a loss of love, as Dracula was, you know. And, you know, he was separated from his true love and renounced God because of that. And so they're separated and soulless and undead, neither living, you know, or dead. And so they're looking for life. They're looking for something. And so they see somebody who they can maybe borrow. They have this mistaken impression that they can borrow the gift of life from somebody else. They can steal it and drink it. And of course, they're never satisfied because it doesn't work.
And there's
you
so
can't
many.
Do it.
And there's so many ways that we supposedly lend them things, and it's we don't realize how much we're being drained. And they're very tricky. It's not like we consciously invite them in. Often, they finagle an invitation.
Exactly. And that's, yes, exactly. I mean, there are a number of ways to get the vampire in, and one is that, yeah, they're very tricky and dishonest and will represent themselves, you know, a certain way when they come knocking, so to speak. And there's that. And then there's also just the fact that as hosts to vampires, we're people who, if you're not a vampire, you tend not to be looking for dishonesty or expecting it in other people. And there are all kinds of things we need to invite into our lives before we find out what they're really made of. And so we don't want to live in fear and not invite anything in. That's not what we're here to do. We're certainly here to invite all kinds of things in.
And we can be, excuse me, but what you're reminding me of in the book is where we are living with vampires in our lives and not only being deceived by them, but deceiving ourselves.
Absolutely. Sure, we become part of part of the problem, exactly in that way. And that's what we're looking for, is responsibility for that. Not blame, not shaming, not, you know, oh, how could you be so stupid, you know, or any of that stuff. And, you know, or what, you know, the other thing we do to people is say, oh, you know, when is she ever going to leave that guy, or when is he ever going to leave her, you know, and we tend to judge others about their vampires, you know, when are they ever going to quit smoking, when are they going to quit drinking, you know. But the thing is, it's a very personal inner war that's going on, I guess, you know, to finally find your own line, to where feeding the vampire becomes unbearable. And
you have a part in this about when you reach that part of unbearable and you don't know what to do next, there are strategies.
Yes.
And one of the strategies is to actually get help. Not
That's
only
it.
Do it yourself, and to have I love the word you have is watchers.
Yes. It's not my word. It's from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, actually, if you've ever seen the show. That was the first place I ever saw that used. You know, there's always a mentor in vampire slaying mythology. There's always like a Van Helsing, somebody who knows all there is to know about vampire slaying, and everybody else who's suddenly waking up and going, oh God, these are really vampires. They're coming out of denial, and they go rushing to, you know, a watcher, a mentor, who says, yep, here's how vampires work, and here's how they're slaying. And so, yeah, you do, and you have to find somebody who knows the vampire that's feeding on you, who has experience with slaying it.
No, it's wonderful. And yet that same person not only has to do with helping you slay the vampire, but reminding you of your own light and helping you see yourself. And there was a part in there where somebody, there was a watcher who whispered to you one time in a parking
yes.
lot.
Yes. Yes, he, it was at a time in my life in early recovery when somebody had tried to say something like, you know, gee, that's a nice sweater you're wearing tonight, or you look great, something like that. And I had immediately done what so many of us do. You know, I said, well, yeah, this isn't actually such a beautiful sweater. Anybody would look good in it. Or, oh, what are you in a good mood today? You know, but I did everything I could to deflect that love that that person was trying to give me. And this watcher of mine sort of just leaned over on one leg and whispered to me, just say thank you. And he never explained that to me, but I came to understand that when I said thank you, instead of resisting all the love that was coming into my life in these different forms, you just say thank you, you receive it, as you do any gift. When you finally say thank you for it, it's yours.
Well, what I like about your book is that there's so many places in it that help us find our own clarity. And I think that's the answer. We can't necessarily even see our vampires a lot. We're making excuses for them.
Yes.
There are so many people who just are big complainers and big judgers because they're not living in their own self-love and self-worth. And so this is all really about helping people not only find out how to clear their world of unwanted baggage around them, but actually their own inner baggage too.
It starts there, because you really cannot be clear with a vampire in your life about, you know, revoking your invitation, as we say. You know, once you've invited a vampire in, then you must revoke your invitation, and it has to be absolutely clear, or it won't work. The magic won't work.
Well, as you say in the book, the vampires will keep coming back, trying to trick you again and again, as if you haven't said anything to them.
That's right. If you if you are not clear in your revocation. And this is why I do all those charts and tables and all that stuff in the book about how to say no, how to, you know, that to tell a vampire, oh, I really can't take care of your kids today. Let's say it's somebody like that. I really can't do that. I'm so busy and I only have, you know, this short hour, and they'll jump in and they'll say, oh, an hour would be great. You know,
you've left it open because you haven't been clear enough in your revocation.
Because you're using anytime you say to a vampire, I can't do something, what they hear is, I would if I could. And so they see their job as making it possible for you so that you can. And the thing is, we're really not expressing our will when we say we can or we can't. We're sounding helpless again. And in order for a vampire to hear the revocation, we have to express our will. And in order to express our will, we have to know what that is. And, you know, so we end up using words like, I want, I don't want. You know, and those are words that work wonders with vampires.
And that could be also for alcohol and drugs. You can't say to yourself, oh, I can't do this anymore. Because it's not powerful enough in your will to say, I can't do it anymore, right?
No, the desire is everything. Desire is, yes, you have to understand that it's what you want.
Right. So you have to really say, I will not do it anymore.
It's my desire, I do not want this in my life anymore. And,
right.
And, you know, with the alcohol, of course, I think with all vampires, there is a moment of grace we experience, and particularly in addiction, it's very visible, or palpable, because it seems to have control of you, and there's a moment of such despair, at least in my experience, such despair, that it lets go of you for just a second. Hmm. And in that second, you run. You run for help.
Uh-huh.
And this is what happens, let's say, in domestic abuse situations, too, where someone will come to a point of grace where they cannot bear it another moment. And they say, I've had enough, I don't want this anymore, and they take off. And the trick is to keep running in that direction, away from the vampire and toward help and a new way of life. And this is what frightens so many people, because it's the devil you know, or the vampire you know, that you sometimes want to stay with, because the prospect of living a life so different without your vampire, it's really frightening, and that's why you have to get clear with yourself about what you're willing to give up. You have to know what it is that's frightening you.
And that clarity has to come from within, right?
That's the only place it can come from. No one else can give that to you.
So there can't be anybody on the outside saying, this doesn't work for you.
Not a chance. It won't work.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, most of us will say, oh, yeah? Well, that's what you think. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's a great way to, I mean, if anything, and that's why I talk a little bit about how toxic judgment is, you know, that we do not judge when someone else has a vampire, you know, and say, gosh, you know, why don't they get rid of that thing? And, you know, because first of all, you can't judge someone else without judging yourself right along them. I mean, it's along with them. It's, you're going to get into trouble with judgment. It lives inside, and so you're going to be just as hard or harder on yourself for every judgment you make of somebody else. But also, we don't know where the line is in anybody else, and we have to, you know, where that line is, where they can't live with a vampire anymore. We can only love and support.
And maybe it's lucky if we're asked to be a watcher.
Oh, then that's the door's open. See, See, yeah. There you go again. I mean, you've invited someone into your life to help. Our invitations are happening all the time, and they're for great things, and they're for, you know, things that are just okay, and then there are things, you know, that really don't work in our lives, and those sometimes become vampires, and those are the ones we have to learn how to revoke our invitations to.
I think it really takes so much compassion, forgiveness, and patience. And there's a lot in the book about the strategy of getting ready to revoke. And
yes.
And when it's the right time to revoke.
Yes.
And it's interesting because as much as we think we want to, we might not be ready. And then we might not do it properly.
That's what we do. And this is why anger is so... It can be very useful as a tool in sort of diagnosing, you know, the wounds that you have. I mean, the way that you tell whether a vampire is a vampire in your life is not by watching the vampire. It's by looking at your own wounds. The wounds are fear, anger, loneliness, despair. Those kinds of things that are happening to you. Will tell you that you know, when they're associated with a person or thing, that thing may be a vampire to you. But let's say you get really angry and you feel very powerful. You mistake that anger for the power to then revoke your invitation, and you go rushing off, you know, bolting into the darkness, you know, where the vampire lives, without any tools, without any self-knowledge. And you think that by screaming, you know, swear, you know, you son of a, you know, and all that stuff, that's going to get rid of the vampire. And of course it doesn't. That doesn't work at all. You have to know what you want and speak it clearly and calmly.
I love the way you go about it in the book, to create the dialogue that you, or even the narrative that you come from in order to revoke the vampire, the invitation. It's so clear, and it comes from being centered, grounded, and honest with yourself.
Yes.
About your responsibility in bringing them in.
Yes, exactly.
It's beautiful. It's so beautifully written. I just, you know, it's so easy to read your book because it's so clear and enjoyable.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. You know, I wanted more than anything to share what is sort of a voice that we use, that I've heard in 12-step groups, which is not punishing, or it doesn't point the finger at anybody and say, you know, you have to do this, as you might hear Dr. Phil say, you know, or whatever, you know, that whole idea that one person knows better than another. No, there are principles that work, and to share them with other people and to share your you know, the things that worked and didn't work, and, you know, to find a community somewhere of, you know, slayers.
Right.
And you sort of help each other through that, rather than, you know, there being one leader who has all the answers, or one guru who has all the answers. I tried to write it in this other voice, which is collaborative, I hope.
Right.
And I hope,
right.
I hope I pulled it off. So it's nice to hear.
Right. What it is that what we need are a lot of really good ideas that ruminate around in our own heads, that we get clarity from, and then we put it together.
We put it together, and part of finding the truth and humility is always, I don't know how you can do that alone, and I don't even think you can do it alone with your God. I doubt it. I'm not a religious person, but in Catholicism, you know, you don't just confess your sins to God. You confess them to another human being, to a priest. And why should that be that you would do it alone? And I think it's because there is, and I'm not speaking for Catholicism, but it's just from my point of view, the reason that works is that we must speak to another human being the truth of who we are.
I love that, finding witnesses.
Witnesses, exactly.
Yeah, I love that in the book, and it really brings us into community and sharing in very honest ways and non-judgmental ways.
Yeah, isn't it a relief to know that you're not alone, to know that other people are having problems too? And that's one of the first gifts you get, is that when you're telling somebody that you're struggling with something, you're giving them the gift of not being alone, because there's no question that they're struggling with their own things, and then they feel the freedom to speak of the things that are hurting them too. I mean, it's I can't think of anything that works better.
Right, and well, we're getting late in the show, and I want to kind of rush us forward to a place that I found in the book that was beautiful, that had to do with getting yourself into such a good place about self-forgiveness, self-love, personal power, that you actually end up blessing everybody, including the vampires.
Yes.
That's so beautiful.
Yes, go ahead.
No, I'm excited to have this conversation with you about such a journey that you've taken and are sharing in a way that's so instructional, that we can all look at this book and understand our lives, understanding our shortcomings, how we fooled ourselves, how we might keep fooling ourselves, how we can stop doing that, how we can actually find other right people in our lives to help us. It's beautiful.
Yes, and that idea of forgiveness too is it's so huge, because and so misunderstood. I think that people are always mistaking forgiveness for some kind of sentimentality, a sentimental feeling they have for somebody. And that's not what it is. Forgiveness is acceptance. It's saying, this is exactly as it is.
Right, right.
This person is exactly as they are. And believe me, vampires don't come out of nowhere. They're not born bad. Or if they are, they're very few. They've been separated.
And as you say in the book, if you have a vampire in your life long enough, eventually you can't find yourself in the mirror.
Yeah, exactly. So. Enough life will be taken from you. And that's such a gorgeous little passage in Salem's Lot, in Stephen King's Salem's Lot, where he has the woman describing that to her husband. She's looking in the mirror and she's telling her husband, yeah, I looked in the, she's being fed every night, her son, her vampire son is coming and feeding on her every night, and of course this is, she's doing it out of love, right? And she says to her husband, I look in the bathroom mirror this morning, I can see the shower curtain and the tub, and I can't quite see myself.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's perfect. So that this is exactly what happened.
And this is such a great book. I'm really recommending it to everybody. And you are Claudia Cunningham, the author of Biting Back. Claudia, how can people reach you?
They can reach me. First of all, I have an author website at www.practicalvampireslayer.com.
Practicalvampireslayer.com. That's great.
And then I can be reached, if you want to reach me directly at my email, I have a practicalslayer@yahoo.com.
Great.
You can go to my blog, which is practicalslayer.blogspot.com. That's HTTP, practicalslayer.blogspot.com. And then, of course, through my publisher, Llewellyn.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Claudia.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Peter, for being a guest
on Energy Stew.
It's just a real honor to be on your show. Thank you.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at Progressive Radio Network. And I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. And thank you so much for listening.